Hello, Central. This is Chuck Shaden on Those Were the Days calling Harold Perry in Hollywood. Are you there, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Yes.
Oh, there he is.
Yes, I am.
How's everything out in Hollywood?
Well, fine, Chuck. It's lovely out here today. The wind's died down. We have beautiful weather. Nice and sunshiny.
Well, that's great. We're calling to say hello from all your fans in the Evanston and Chicago area who think about you regularly and who recently spotted you on one of those Charmin commercials on television.
Well, fine. I didn't even know that they'd already been released, but I'm glad to hear you say so. We ought to be getting a check.
Well, you're doing quite a few things in the commercial area these days.
Yes, I have been doing it for quite a while. Nearly 15 years. I've been writing some and appearing in some and doing quite a lot of voiceovers, you know, on radio and television.
Well, it's so difficult not to distinguish your fantastic voice. You're doing a good job disguising them.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I do a lot of characters. In the old days in Chicago, I used to do seven voices on the Tom Mix Rawson Straight Shooter show, which a lot of people don't know about, I guess. That was way back in 37, 38, and 39.
Well, you once played Sheriff Mike Shaw on that show, didn't you?
I did Mike Shaw in a voice like that, and I did an Englishman in a voice like that.
And I did Henry Akins, who was a town banker, in a voice like that.
And I did Hawk Barrett, who was a villain. And I also did Hawk Barrett's brother, who was named Shotgun Barrett, in the same voice, except he had a lift. And then, of course, I did Li Lu, the Chinese cook. I did a chief, an Indian chief also. And then when I left in 39 to come here with Fibber McGee and Molly, there were four or five fellows that took over the parts, including a chap by the name of Forrest Lewis, who did very well in several characters, including one called Wash.
Ah, yes, Wash.
He's out of here now.
He's out there now?
Yeah, I see him occasionally.
Oh, good. Do you reminisce about Tom Mix?
Oh, yes. Well, I've known Forrest since the day that I first went to Chicago, way back in 1935.
Uh-huh.
Way back.
Way back there. Say, I found a note someplace that said another actor playing Mike Shaw, or at one time who played Mike Shaw on the Tom Mix show, was a fellow by the name of Waterman.
Yes, Willard Waterman.
That's right.
Yes, well, Willard Waterman, as a matter of fact, when I left there, I had to find about three people to succeed me in various characters on that show and another one. And Willard Waterman had a voice similar to mine, and later on, of course, when I left the Gildersleeve show because of an impasse with a sponsor, he played the Gildersleeve. You probably know that.
Oh, of course, sure.
You're up on your trivia and all that sort of thing. And he also did the ill-fated television version. Unfortunately,
yes.
It was a kind of a bad series, and they dumped it.
Why would you say that the television series didn't make it?
Well, I don't know, actually, except that Willard Waterman was a very tall man. And it's very difficult for a tall man to do comedy. I mean, a real tall man. We don't see many of those, you know. I mean, when he said, Leroy, it looked like he was going to kill the kid, you know. See, Gildersleeve, in my opinion, was not a tall man. He was a little man who thought he was a big man. That was the character. But that had nothing to do with Willard. We're very good friends, and I thought he did a good job on the radio show. I just think he was miscast on the television.
On the TV. Was there any possibility or opportunity for you to do the television thing?
Not really. I was approached on it once, but I wouldn't consider doing it unless I owned it. I did not own the name Gildersleeve. That was the difficulty. That's the reason I left.
Oh, I see.
It was owned by, Johnson's Wax, who owned the Fibber McGee show, and then it was owned by Kraft, who bought it from Johnson, and then evidently Kraft sold it to NBC. I don't really know what happened there, only that I didn't own it, and they wouldn't sell it to me, so I would play it.
Oh, I see. Well, it was...
In those days, what you did for just salary, of course, was it went out the window.
Right.
Tax-wise.
Right, and you had no residual benefits from it either.
No, there was no protection at all, except that I was paying a heavy tax, and I had other interests, and so I decided not to do it.
Well, that was a sad day for the fans of Hal Perry.
I'm afraid it was for me and for a great many people who wrote me thousands of letters asking me why I had done such a thing. They thought that I had sold out for a lot of money, and as one person said, left us in the lurch. Uh-huh. Well, that wasn't the condition at all. I didn't want to go into any detail or in the press or to anybody in particular.
Uh-huh.
We were all friends, and it was just one of those things, you know.
Well, when exactly did you exit from the Great Gildersleeve character?
In 51.
In 51.
Yes, I played it for actually 11 seasons.
Uh-huh. From about 39.
From 41 to 51, but it was over 11 seasons, you know.
Oh, I see.
I started the character, you know, on Fibber McGee in 1937.
Right. That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and then I played it until 1941.
Mm-hmm. Actually, when you were with the Fibber McGee and Molly program for some time before you actually created a character known as Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve, right?
That's right. I did several things. One of them, the first thing I ever did there was, I believe, was an Italian father, and that's how I happened to get on the show. There was somebody in an orchestra that used to play the part, and he was snowbound or something up in Wisconsin, couldn't make it. And I had worked with Marion and Jim Jordan on Colton Meyer's Kindergarten, which is a show they used to do even after they did Fibber McGee. They loved doing it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this Italian father, and then I stayed on the show and did, a number of parts. Gooey Fooey, a laundry man, and George Fadich, kind of an insurance salesman.
Were you Gooey Fooey? I was surprised to know that.
Oh, yeah. I did a character called Perry the Portuguese Piccolo Player in Ted Weems' band. That's when Perry Como was still in the band.
Uh-huh.
On the Fibber McGee show. Uh-huh. And, I did other characters. Oh, and I took over a part that an actor by the name of Tom Post had played. It was mm-hmm. He was the mayor in the town. His name was Mayor Appleby, and McGee called him Mayor Applepuss, you know.
McGee Wood.
Yeah. And I have some tapes, which I'd forgotten completely about. I played George Gildersleeve first. Then Harry Gildersleeve.
And I heard one program that you're Homer Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Don Quinn loved the name Gildersleeve, so
uh-huh.
he tried out several things, you know. And I did an old Englishman on the show once where McGee was going on a safari. I have a tape of that the collector recently sent that I'd forgotten completely about.
Oh, I have another show where you were an interior decorator.
Yes,
and
yes.
An Italian wrestler.
I remember that. We had a lot of fun on the show. Actually, Gildersleeve wasn't born until I had played the voice, but he mm-hmm. wasn't born until Molly became quite ill,
mm-hmm.
and she was off the show for a few months, and then they kind of pumped up all the smaller parts, you know,
mm-hmm.
like myself mm-hmm. and things that Bill Thompson did, and suddenly we were very important to the show. Well, they gave the Gildersleeve character an opportunity, and I threw in that laugh one night that I had never used on the show, and that was it, you know.
Well, you were, as Gildersleeve, as Throckmorton Gildersleeve, you were always rivals with Fibber, and they're always fighting and arguments going on.
Mm-hmm. See, after they called the character Throckmorton, then
uh-huh.
I moved in next door.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And you remember, I was his neighbor,
uh-huh.
and I even had a wife on the show, but she was never heard. She was only talked about.
Did she have a name? I can't recall if she had a name.
Yeah, well, I had a wife, but she was never heard.
Uh-huh.
Molly just occasionally said, oh, there's Mrs. Gildersleeve.
Oh, Mrs. Gildersleeve, I see, I see.
And that was about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I made the transition from my own show and became a bachelor,
mm-hmm.
I don't think I even had one letter asking what happened to your wife.
Because no one ever had ever heard of her or heard her speak.
When you don't, you know, you only hear about a character, why, I don't think it impresses you that much.
Well, Don Quinn, I guess, did this in a number of characters on the show. Sweetie Face there never appeared on the show.
Yeah, that's right. Sweetie Face was just somebody that was talked about.
Right.
You know, that Bill Thompson
yeah.
did. And he, of course, did a great many other characters. Nick DiPopoulos and Boomer the... And that ain't the way I heard it, Johnny. I see Bill out here occasionally. He works for the Union Oil Company. He's got a very impressive job as a counselor for children's entertainment and all that sort of thing.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, there was somewhat of a difference between the Gildersleeve character that was on the Fibber McGee show and then the, what would it have been, a warmer character, perhaps, that you created for
yes,
the...
Yes, I was an antagonist, you know, to McGee
uh-huh.
on his show,
uh-huh.
Which when I left, that's what Gail Gordon became. Mayor LaTrivia.
Right.
McGee
yes.
had to have somebody that he could fight all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So when I decided to do my own show, of course, why, then I warmed the character up a little bit, even changed the attitude, you know, so that he became a warmer person. Because he had a family to raise, and it wasn't too difficult to do. All I had to do was kind of lighten up the voice a little bit and make the laugh a little more human. And we were just lucky. I just happened to hit the air at the right time and made it, you know?
Well, that was a wonderful show, and we remember it well. And actually, you made a few movies as Gildersleeve, too, didn't you?
Well, I made three movies at RKO with Fibber McGee and Molly and Edgar Bergen.
Uh-huh.
And Lucille Ball as Gildersleeve. And then I made a series of six of my own pictures, which was called the Gildersleeve series.
Uh-huh.
And I even did one at Paramount with Bob Burns called Coming Around the Mountain with a lot of people. Even Uncle Ezra was brought out from Chicago to work in it.
I think that hit the late show here not too long ago.
No.
And we yell and scream and tell our listeners about it whenever one of those things comes on. I think Heavenly Days was a Fibber McGee and Molly one. I believe you were in that, too, weren't you?
I was in Look Who's Laughing in Heavenly Days, and and I did one other one. And then I did one with Lucy Ball and Victor Mature called 7 Days Leave as Gildersleeve, as an attorney, while I was at RKO. It was all about... The Court of Missing Heirs. Uh-huh. You remember that radio show?
Oh, yes, sure.
And I was the attorney representing that particular
show. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So I read somewhere along the line that when you started as Gildersleeve in the movies, you had to go on a diet to gain weight.
Well, yes. I weighed about... when I started doing the Gildersleeve character in pictures, I only weighed about 195, which was pretty big for my size. But I wasn't big enough, you know, and I was quite young. And so I did. I started eating things, you know, that would make me heavier. And by the time I got to my own series, which was then about 1942, a year after I started the radio show, I actually weighed 227. And when I decided I didn't want to do any more of those pictures because I wasn't very happy with them, I just went on a diet and lost 50 pounds, and RKO hadn't seen me for about 2 months because we were on a sort of a sabbatical.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the head of the company almost collapsed when he saw me. I looked 15 years younger. I was down to 176.
Oh, my goodness. Boy,
I remained that way for an awful long time.
That must be very, very good to be able to do that on and off.
Under a doctor's orders.
Uh-huh.
And I was still young enough, you know. I was born in 1908, and this happened in 42. So you can see that I was still young enough to do things like that.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm only up to 185 now, and have been for quite a while.
Well, you look amazingly like the character of Throcky. I guess they used to call you Throcky, didn't they, once in a while? Judge Hooker and...
Everybody's gone, with the possible exception of Walter Tetley.
Uh-huh.
The man who played Judge Hooker, Earl Ross, passed on like 7 or 8 years ago, and Dick LeGrand, who did Mr. Peavy, who was the oldest of the clan, he died about 8 years ago, and he was nearly 90.
Wow.
I had worked with him in San Francisco in radio, and I was a kid, and prior to that, in a tent show. And I was the one that brought him into the series. And then Arthur Q. Bryan, who did the barber, Floyd the Barber,
yes.
He passed on about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken Christie, also a Chicago actor that I'd known back there, who played the chief. He was the guy with a big bass voice. We were the Jolly Boys, you know. We comprised the Jolly Boys. He passed on about 10 years ago, something like that. Walter Tetley, who did Leroy, who admits to being something like in his middle 50s, is still around, although he was in the hospital for about a year after having a very serious accident on a motorcycle. But he's up and around now, still doing a lot of voices, you know. He's quite clever. He still has the Gildersleeve voice, Leroy. Voice, which is still amazing. And Birdie is around.
Is she?
Lillian Randolph.
Lillian, yes.
And most of the women, except Bea Benaderet, who played Eve. She passed away a couple of years ago. She was the star of her own show, you know, Petticoat Junction.
How about Lila Ransom?
Lila Ransom.
Lila, I mean, yes.
Yes, she's still around.
Uh-huh.
She's married. She's married to a doctor here in Beverly Hills by the name of Frieden. She's Mrs. Frieden. They have two or three children, and she does an awful lot of work in commercials and cartoon voices and that sort of thing, you know.
Now, there was a fellow on that on the Great Gildersleeve program, a character by the name of Bruno. Bronco.
Yeah.
And
that's Dick Crenna.
Dick Crenna, right?
Yeah, he's a very famous motion picture star.
Absolutely.
And, yes, Dick had worked in I had done a Boy Scout show,
mm-hmm.
and Dick was the head of it, and he produced it. He was about 16 or 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so later on when we were casting for a boyfriend for Marjorie, the fellow that had been doing the boyfriend was Ben Alexander, and he went off to the wars. You remember Ben Alexander?
Sure, he was, he did some,
he
was on Dragnet, oh yes.
Ben.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, he was doing a part, and we went, and he went off to the Navy in about 1942, 43, and so we had to recast or get another boyfriend, and I thought of Dick Crenna and brought him in, and he did Bronco for years, even married Marjorie, and, and then, of course, did a great many other shows, and then
he was on Armist Brooks, I think. And
I recently did the Danny Thomas show for him.
He produced
the Danny Thomas show this season.
Well, we saw you. You were playing, of all things, I think, a hippie record shop owner on that show, weren't you?
It was a pretty big part until they started cutting it.
Maybe they wanted you to lose a little weight then and
no,
make room for Granddaddy.
They were building up another character in the show. The big Negro singer. I can't remember.
Rosie Greer.
Rosie
Greer.
And they wanted a little more time that particular week to build the character up, and so they just cut the rest of the show all to ribbons.
Oh, well, maybe we should also have a letter writing campaign in to say let's bring back that hippie record shop owner.
Well, he's off. You know, Danny's off now.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he got canceled like a great many shows this year, unfortunately.
Well, I think he's lined up with a number of specials too. And where might we look for you next on the tube?
Well, I don't really know in television as an actor, except that, see, I'm regularly employed out here by Gibraltar Savings and Loan.
Uh-huh.
I do all their commercials, radio and television. That's a West Coast company, of
uh-huh.
course.
Uh-huh.
And they've just recently acquired two or three other savings and loan companies up in the Northwest and in Central California, and they're opening all these places. And I go around, of course, and make personal appearances, and I take a lot of old memorabilia of radio, and I discuss it with the people that come in. They flock in to see Orphan Annie Buttons and all that sort of thing, you know. And I'm doing so well with a commercial bit that I have to turn down a few acting things. Next week, for instance, there's a company from Detroit coming out here to film two on-camera commercials with me for an account I have back there called Faygo Beverages in the Middle West, not in the Chicago area, but in Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. And of course, I do a lot of voiceovers. I'm the voice of the Red Goose Shoes.
Are you?
And I work for the for Master Charge out here. And I have some radio commercials for Challenge Dairies, and they keep, you know, renewing them, and so I get kind of busy. I had turned down a couple of TV shows this year because I couldn't make that 4-day schedule, you know.
Well, they're getting good talent.
As long as I can turn down, I'm delighted.
That's good. Well, we're delighted to have had this chance to reminisce
you,
with you.
I'm delighted you called me.
Well, I hope that we can do it again sometime, and by George, if you ever get into the Chicago area, we'll find some people from the old Flying Time or the Welcome Valley Show or Tom Mix, and we'll kick it around for a while.
WLTV, right?
LTD, right.
All right. Well, thank you very much.